I think they were there.
What time did you go by?
9:30 in the morning. There was a wedding in the afternoon, and I thought something's wrong.
Well, they were. I had proposed that I be stationed in the parking lot to redirect people, but there was a lot to do at the mall. So I lost that job, and who events people were going to do that?
There was a guy out doing some sort of maintenance. But the station, I have things work. I go home and I walk in the house and I smoke smoke. My wife had a pan stove when we left that morning.
Oh my God.
If I had gone in somewhere, I'd have
left. Oh wow. So we did the right thing to move the expo and not advertise it.
Thank you.
We knew that was going to happen.
Didn't know it'd be a board member.
Wow.
Okay.
Hello? Is this on? It looks like it's on. I'm going to call the meeting to order. It's 8 o'clock, and I think the first order of business is Peter Tracy will introduce the new board members.
Thank you, Elaine. We have a new board member who that would be Joyce, and Joyce actually isn't very new, but she we welcome you back, Joyce.
I appreciate you not saying I'm old.
And then Phil Krein is also a new board member, and Phil is with the University of Illinois and is very invested in developmental disability services. And then Sue Suter, I think everybody has met. We've introduced her before. And then we also, I want to remind people that we have Gary Maxwell here, who is our liaison from the Champaign County Board. And so we're glad to have him here. And he's been a very invested member and has provided a lot of good information back to the county board for us. So we're glad you're here, Gary.
Okay, Stephanie, could you call the roll?
Joyce Dill.
Here.
Phil Krein.
Here.
Elaine Palencia.
Here.
Mike Smith.
Here.
Sue Suter.
Here.
All right, and are there any additions to the agenda?
Nope.
Okay. Citizen input? I do... Come on forward. I just want to remind people that this is being recorded, so state your name and affiliation, if any, and let's limit comments to 5 minutes.
Oh, I'll be much shorter than that.
Okay.
My name is David Happ. I live in Philo. I'm here with my wife, Lisa. We have a 21-year-old daughter who right now is in a residential placement out of state. We are, for the past several months, even years, we've been looking for an adult placement for her back in this community. And it just the things we're looking for aren't that extravagant. We want to try to find a place where she can have three or four other residents there with her. We want her to be in a place where she has her own bedroom. We're looking for a day program that has maybe a workshop that has a variety of activities. And another, we want that to be supplemented with a job in the community. Like I said, these aren't extravagant things, but we're having trouble finding a place locally that offers those things. So what I wanted to ask is for you guys, when you're doing your budget, to encourage the local providers, the folks that you're funding, to offer these things, because they're not being offered now necessarily. They're used to maybe doing the 8-bedroom and sharing rooms, limited jobs, not so many jobs in the community. And so what we're hoping is to find a place where we are offered these things that are a little bit different. And I think that with your guys' encouragement and maybe some mandates, maybe that'll start to change. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And David, I think you sent in a letter that would be testimony for the public hearing.
I sure did, yes.
Okay, great. So yeah. We have that.
Yeah, what I try to do in the letter is just tell a little bit about our story and why I think those things are appropriate for our daughter and probably other folks.
Yeah, and that's very helpful.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, David. Any other? Yes?
Can I just do it from here?
Yeah, state your name and affiliation.
I'm Vicki Nicewander from Mahomet, and I just wanted to inform the board that there was a meeting last week of the governor's office and Health and Family Services. They are going to be writing a new waiver, which is intended to replace all 8 of the current Medicaid waivers in the state. The time frame on this is very, very short. It could have a huge impact on services for people with developmental disabilities in the state. So I just wanted to let you know that. I will forward any information that I get to Peter on that, but they're going to be scheduling some meetings, and there were very, very few representatives from the DD community at this meeting last week. So I thought that might be of interest to you.
When you say the time frame is short, you mean
I think that the completed waiver application needs to be submitted to CMS by sometime in January. So they're going to have this all written and ready to go by mid-December.
That's something we may want ACMI to get involved in, because that sounds pretty substantial in terms of service delivery. And
Is there a draft of the new waiver at this point?
No, they have only been, they said they've only had internal discussions on it, and they weren't going to actually write anything down until they got input from stakeholders. And those meetings are going to be scheduled relatively quickly.
Thank you.
Okay, any other? Yes.
Hi, my name is Barb Jewett. I'm from Mahomet. We also have a son who is 21 and is in an out-of-state residential placement funded by the State Board of Education. And like the HAPs, we are also looking for a place where Jason can have his own room in a small setting and can have a variety of options for how he spends his day, whether it be working in a workshop, volunteering, just participating in social events in the community. And that's very difficult to find in this area. And it's also very difficult just to find anything because of the lack of capacity in this area. That DSC does a lot of good for a lot of people, but they can only serve so many. And when you look at the stats and you have almost as many people in the young adult range who need services that match the capacity of DSC, what are you going to do? And we don't want Jason to sit at home when the school bus stops coming. That's just not acceptable. And so I urge the board to encourage increased capacity in the county, perhaps help another agency get started providing services in Champaign County. And I also encourage everyone on the board, all the providers, and all of us parents to be more creative. We have to start thinking outside the box, and we have to start meeting the needs of our residents who need assistance because they have an intellectual or developmental disability. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Thanks. Just leave it on Joyce's. And thank you, Mrs. Jewett. And I think we have something in writing from you as well.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any other citizen input? Okay, do we have anything from the Mental Health Board?
I just wanted to make sure that everybody had a chance to look at the Mental Health Board packet. They meet this afternoon. I wanted to point out that the priority number one is collaboration with the Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board. We have, for those of you who are new board members, I think you've had a chance to look over the intergovernmental agreement between the Mental Health Board and the Developmental Disability Board, but For those of you who are new to our process here, these two boards have an overlapping responsibility for developmental disabilities. Because we passed the 377 referendum in 2004, it did not relieve the Mental Health Board of its responsibility. And so at this point, it's actually very clearly defined how much money from the Mental Health Board is earmarked for developmental disabilities, and it's approaching almost $600,000 at this point. So it's a significant amount, and to collaborate, the leadership of the two boards meet, and we talk before we make decisions to try to get things smoothed out so that everything is integrated and we have a good planning process. So take a look at that. Developmental disabilities is at the forefront. We have a couple of members on the mental health board who are particularly interested in developmental disabilities and intellectual disabilities. So.
Okay, we need to approve the July 17th board minutes. Next. So moved. Do I have a second?
A second.
Is there any discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved. As for the next item, President's comments, I only will say that I attended both the hearing on September 18th and passed out packets for a while at the Disability Expo. And both events, I want to thank everyone who was involved in organizing either or both of these events. I thought there was a lot of good energy, a lot of interaction. And I bought a wonderful oil painting from one of the artists in the Pride Room. If you wanted the big painting of the farm, I got it. So it was a very nice, both of those were very useful events. So thank you to everyone who helped. Peter, do you have comments?
Yeah, just very briefly, I thought it would be good to go over the schedule for what to anticipate during this allocation cycle. As you know, we're in a new allocation cycle. This is it's kind of scary, but this is FY15 coming up, at this point, this meeting really marks the start of the funding cycle, because we begin to talk about the priorities and decision support process. And so that's out there. It's in the packet. I assume we'll probably have some board discussion, but we're taking input. Anybody that has any input into what we've identified as priorities, please let us know. And we did listen to the public comment, and we will look to see to what extent we need to adjust to include items from public comment and also from the hearing. Anyway, next month we will come back with a decision memo of the criteria, which will come to the board for discussion and hopefully approval. That will give agencies and stakeholders some ideas about what the board is thinking about. In December, we issue a public notice in the News Gazette that there is the availability of funding. In January, we have the process of accepting applications for funding opens up, and in February it closes. In April, we review the applications that have come in. Staff generally prepare a summary of each application, and in May we make decisions about how our funding is going to be spent. Then in June, we negotiate contracts, and July, the contracts begin. So that's where we are. As I said, this is kind of the start of that whole funding cycle. That's about it at this point. The only other thing I would mention is this is going to be a tight funding year. We did our budget and have since received some word that we may not be getting the amount of money that we thought we were going to get. which means that it may be difficult for us to even sustain the level of funding that we currently have. But as that shapes up, we'll keep you informed. But the county money hasn't been going up tremendously. It's kind of interesting. We have, if you come to the mental health board meeting this afternoon, you will hear that the mental health board is actually going to get a little more money. And because of the property tax, I've forgotten what it's called now. Anyway, there's the property tax limits that are out there. It has a perverse effect on boards that are at their maximum levy. And if a board isn't at its maximum levy, you actually can benefit. So this board is at the maximum levy, and unfortunately that hurts us a little bit. There's nothing we can do about that. It kind of is what it is. So with that in mind, it's very important. This meeting is an important meeting for us to kind of lay out the ideas for where we're going to be going.
Okay, thank you, Peter. And the staff report from Lynn is deferred, is that right? Till next time. Okay, do we have agency information to be presented? Okay, then we'll move to the financial report. The claims are included in the board packet, so we need to have approval of those claims.
I move we pay the claims.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So the claims have been approved. In new business, we need to elect a secretary for the board. And one of the reasons, a reason for that is if the president is out of town and there are contracts or amendments to contracts to be signed, then there needs to be another officer to do that. Also, when the heads of the mental health board and this board meet, they have two people, right, who come to those meetings, and so the secretary position also attends those meetings. So I would like to open the floor to nominations for secretary of this board.
I nominate Mike Smith.
And you're looking like maybe you'd accept that.
Sure.
Is there a second? All right,
second.
Discussion. I guess the discussion is you will accept that position. Good. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Good. We have a secretary. We had a little gap there, and Lynn and I were meeting over every which way before somebody would go out of town to get things signed, so that will help with that. Also in your packet are the draft FY13 program performance outcomes. And as you see, that's a summary of all funded agency utilization data and performance measure outcome reports. That's included for information only. I will only say that, and I know I had this trouble last year, when I was reading these, when you have the target numbers, sometimes those are contact hours, and sometimes those numbers seem to be actual people served. I wasn't when it gets up into the hundreds, I'm kind of not sure which one I'm looking at. So very often it's designated, but once in a while those numbers are not designated, and I had to kind of think, well, now, you know, is that number of contact hours or is that the number of people that were served by this agency in this period? So I'm just throwing that out as something that maybe could just be specified on those reports. If it's three, you know, it's probably not contact hours, but people that came to a meeting. But sometimes it's hard to tell. Then we also have the draft of our three-year plan, 2013-2015, with the 2014 objectives. And that's going to be approved November 20th at the November 20th meeting. If you look at that, I believe there are underlined parts where some language has been changed and or crossed out. So that it is a draft. And then you see that the other two D and E are. So it's a lot to read. I don't know if you have read it yet. Lynn?
I want to make a comment in response to your comments about the summary of program performance. That it really is a summary, and I apologize for that. The agencies have provided a lot more detail than is expressed there.
Yeah.
I would prefer to create a lengthy analysis even give you quarter by quarter. Where it's hours, I think it's indicated when it's hours. Yeah. Otherwise, it's contacts or persons. Mm-hmm. And some of those really do include high numbers of persons because the focus of the program might be it might be an assessment-focused program, or it might be the child care consultations were occurring in child care settings and every child in the room was treated as an NTPC. I don't know that the agency will be doing that this year, but that's one of the reasons for a high number of NTPCs in DSC's children's program. So anyway, there is a lot more information provided to us than I've provided in summary, and that's probably because summarizing is not my natural direction to go. And so if it's confusing or if there are questions you would like answered, I can probably get them fairly easily.
Okay. Thank you. Well, it's, maybe more my problem than yours, but I know the hours are very often, it says hours, and the other I'm thinking, well, is that hours and they forgot to say so, or is it?
It's possible that I made such a mistake. But I have also heard that from someone else who looked at it very carefully that it wasn't really informative because they have kind of smashed a lot of detail together. Yeah. So that's my bad. That's not on what the agencies are reporting. They are giving a lot more detail than I was able to express. So,
thank you. Peter?
Yeah, I was just going to mention that one of the things that we're looking into, and maybe Mark would like to comment on this, is a new system that is used by one of our sister agencies in the Chicago area. And it's basically what they did is they created their own billing system for Medicaid. And the system is also adaptable so that it can be used for non-Medicaid billing as well. So it would be, we think it would be very user-friendly for providers to use because it's, it's essentially the same format as what they would be using for Medicaid. And it would also allow us to be able to look more closely and get performance information on an individual client level. So we're investigating that. I think Mark has got an appointment to go up there sometime in the near future to look at it. And,
Peter and I had an opportunity to see a demonstration of this system at the ACMI quarterly meeting in late September, and it's a reimbursement tracking system, and it's focused on fee-for-service contracts, so services that can be converted to fee-for-service, you set the rate either using a state rate or if it's a similar service to a state service, or you establish a rate for the service, and then each individual client gets a client ID, RIN number, and that number can then be used to cross-check eligibility with state programming, state services, funded services, and if they're state eligible, then depending on the type of service, if it's not supported with state dollars, we would be in a position to establish a rate and pay for that service if the board was so inclined. But we are just in the very initial stages of exploring this. It probably will be some time before we make a decision as to whether to implement that here. It does look it looks pretty interesting, actually. So.
Okay.
Thank you. I think that's on the surface, a great idea, especially if it means less paperwork for agencies. And it also sounds like that goes along with one of our values of person-centered, and money follows the person. So it would also fit in with that and move us more in that direction too.
And that's where we started to talk about it, because we can't really account for overlap. There are people who are probably being served by multiple agencies, and that I see in site visits. But I think that's meaningful. I'd like to understand why, and so we can actually move towards understanding what a self-directed constellation mm-hmm. of services really looks like for the individuals mm-hmm. in this community who are using the system. So we can sort by people in a system like this. And that was sort of the original idea, and then it becomes very helpful, too, to protect against supplementation, if that's the case.
Well, and I think it also, I love the idea that people drive the supports and services, and then that drives the funding and the budget. I mean, that would be great.
Okay. Any other comments on the packet?
On the three-year plan, we have received some comments already from some providers and stakeholders and interested parties. Anybody else is welcome to comment. If the board has any particular things that they want to see added or subtracted from it. It's sort of our, administrative macro look at what we're doing. So please feel free to bring comments.
Madam Chair, I would just like to, this, as Peter said, this is our roadmap. So I would really encourage people. There's been individuals who have testified today or talked today. I would really like to encourage stakeholders and agencies and families to respond to these priorities. Because, as I said, these are going to be our map. And Mrs. Jewett talked about outside the box. Any ideas, it would be very helpful.
Okay. Shall we move to old business then?
We're still
are we, excuse me, whoop, because.
The priority memo.
Oh, the priority.
Why am I not saying that?
Isn't it on there?
D. Oh.
Allocation memo, right?
Okay. Yes. So, yes, these are the allocation criteria.
It's hard to find 13D.
Yeah.
There it is, yeah. Does anyone have comments on this? Yes, Peter.
I just wanted to touch on a few things as we were talking about, and we've heard there's a lot of change coming. Vicki's comments about the changes in the waiver system that they're talking about doing. In the first paragraph, I think it's just helpful to get a bearing on what's happening in the state. And we have something that's called rebalancing. Those of you who probably have heard that term, what they're talking about there is the closure of state-operated facilities and moving people out of those facilities into community. We also have a variety of consent decrees, like the Ligas consent decree, which addresses some of the things that our public testimony talked about today, that people should be in facilities with four or less people in them. We also have a new law on the books that's called the Employment First Law, which at this point I had a conversation with Dale Morrissey, who had mentioned that it's sort of like the state has absolutely no idea what that means and how to implement it at this point. If I'm paraphrasing what you said, Dale, if I missed anything, you can comment.
Is there a plan to form a plan?
I think that, and I know Dale's been working on this, and I think that that gives us an opportunity in Champaign County to put something together and be proactive, that we can sort of model for the state, too. It gives us an opportunity to kind of jump in there, even though that is discouraging. And I think, and Peter, I think that you don't get enough credit. There's an association of community health.
Mental health authorities.
And DD, that's when we refer to ACMI. And Peter is chair of the DD committee for the state. So that gives us a wonderful opportunity. I think we're very lucky. And that gives us a wonderful opportunity to have input on the state level as well on some of these issues.
Well, I think the point is that there's a tremendous amount of change happening, and the other major thing is the Affordable Care Act and Medicaid expansion, which is coming into play. And the, you know, this is where the waivers are going to come in, you know, and how that fits leaves us in a, you know, one of the challenges. I hit this in the second paragraph of my document here, but you know, there was a story about a man who was a sculptor, and he sculpted horses. And so someone was asking him, how is it that you do this? You know, how do you manage this? And he said, well, I start off with a huge block of stone, and I chip away anything that isn't the horse. And that's kind of the position that we're in. We have to kind of chip away anything that isn't Medicaid. And it's because of the issue of supplementation. You basically have an entitlement program that is a partnership between the state and federal government. And many of the high-end services that are attached to the Ligas consent decree and probably Employment First or any lawsuits that, that come from that are really going to be tied to that Medicaid program. And to some degree, we're in a funny situation because we can actually impair someone's ability to get services by attempting to help them at the local level by providing funding. And we've ran into that with one client that we fund in a residential place that kind of makes him ineligible for other kinds of services. So we have to, there are still many opportunities, obviously, because if you know anything about state government or how government manages entitlement programs, when they don't have enough money or they want to control costs, what they do is they tinker with what is the eligibility requirements. And so, you know, you have this big group of people and you shrink eligibility, that leaves a lot of people that might not be eligible for services. And we've seen that in the early intervention program. The state defines, or the feds, or whoever it is, defines early intervention as having a certain percent of disability. And there's a lot of kids that have significant disabilities that don't meet that. So those are the kids that we typically have been serving. So we're going to be in that kind of a situation. But the other things that come into play here is we just don't know how things are going to, you know, there's so many things that are up in the air right now, like the waivers, what's going to happen with Medicaid, how that's going to tie in. We don't know what the essential health benefits are at this point. They have not been defined, especially in the behavioral health area. So there's a lot of things that are going to be happening in the next year that are going to put us in a position where we have to be kind of thinking quickly and responding. So I think that is the overview that I want to make sure that people are aware of as we go into this. And then we do list some of the priorities. And I don't know if the board wants to go through those or talk about them or you've seen them. You know, we're open to comments, but we did list person-centered planning as a major priority, primarily because of the things that Sue has already mentioned. Employment services is a major priority. Obviously, we're going to be looking at ways to deal with employment, and the creativity is probably going to be something that we need to do. Comprehensive services to young children, flexible family support, adult day programming, consumer advocacy and family support organizations, inclusion of anti-stigma programs and services. And then the last is individual residential service options, and most of these are going to be related to options that for people that aren't eligible for the Medicaid funding and the entitlement programs. So I don't know if you all have any comments. That's sort of the backdrop, and none of these are particularly new, but I think we're going to have to be figuring out how we do them maybe a little bit differently and more creatively. Think outside the box, someone said earlier.
I have a couple of things I want to say. One is that while the state is doing these things, the people that receive the services need to be the first priority. And unfortunately, that's not the case most of the time. Money seems to be the priority. So when we look at all of the things that should be done, that's in this pile. Then we have to look at what the needs are of the people that we serve. So when we are looking at these things, thinking outside the box is a great thing to do. And I think almost every agency, if not every agency that we fund, tries to do that. But when you are at a point where you are getting so little money for so many services, there are people that constantly are saying things about what needs to be done, but nobody is really, I shouldn't say nobody, what we really need to talk about is how are our dollars going to actually help the most people with the things that they actually need. And I know every agency thinks about that. I think the state thinks about other things. And honestly, I'm not hopeful on this. I think that what they're going to do is arrange things, regulations, all sorts of things, so that it's even harder to do what needs to be done for the populations that need this help. I wish I had an answer for it. I wish that I could fund every single thing that people ask for. But I have to look at what is needed by the people who actually need that help. So, yes, I know these things are here. I understand that. I'm getting tired of hearing that, well, this is what we need to do. I don't think there's anybody in this room, and probably no one who has a child with special needs, who thinks that we shouldn't be doing more. We all want to do more. I don't want to denigrate any agency, any person who is giving services at this point simply because it needs to be different. How are they going to do that without the money to support the people who actually need those services? How are we going to do it? What we need to look at is exactly where we can put our dollars that will be the best for the highest number of people who actually need those services. It's easy for someone at the state who has no real involvement to tell us what we need to do. What we need to look at is what does our county need, and what do the people in our county need, and how can we best afford to do that. So, yes, it's great to look at these things. It's great to think about these things because, obviously, we need to do that. But we also need to keep in mind that we are not going to get utopia. It isn't going to happen. I wish it was, but it isn't. And I just want to make it clear that as we go through this funding process, we would love to do far more than we're going to be able to do. But we have to really look out for the people who need this, these services. So that's exactly what I intend to do. I'm sure everyone on this board intends to do that. Just realize we have limitations. And be aware of that. And please do not go after any agency, any group who is doing the best that they can do. Each and every agency here does a wonderful job. So for us, it's a matter of giving the money where we feel it is needed the most. And we listen to everyone. We have letters in our packets. We see your letters. We understand that. And being a parent, I know exactly what your feelings are. My son waited for years to get into a facility that he would be best served in. Is it perfect? Is it utopia? No, it is not. But what it is something that is good and it works, and we need to keep those things in mind. So I'll get off my high horse and let somebody else talk if they want.
Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I'd like to add a comment on that. I think you know, we also will take our role seriously as more than just a funding agency, responding to these kinds of requests. I think the priorities also attempt to help set a direction and maybe point us as a county and a set of agencies in a particular direction that perhaps we can leverage and be more effective about some of the things we do. You know, in the public comment, we certainly heard and obviously we're very familiar with the need for much more focused, individualized residential placement options at a more appropriate level. You know, and we need, as a group, as a county, as a set of providers, to be trying to work in those directions. So I do think there are, you know, things that we can do with these priorities to help all of us kind of move in a consistent direction and work together as a group, which I think will leverage some of that funding as well. But to the extent that you think of us just as a funding agency, you know, there are very significant limits on what we can do. You know, there's never enough money to do all the things that need to be done. There's no doubt about that.
Thank you. Any other comments on the allocation criteria?
Yes. One thing we didn't make, and we didn't make anything of it in the draft memo of funding priorities, is the impact of the DSM-5. And I've read about four pages of it, so it's hard for me to say.
say right now if there even will be an impact, but when Pete mentioned eligibility, I thought, you know, there probably is a high risk of, and then the more I learned from the agency providers about what they understand of diagnostic practice in this community, the more problematic I think things could be related to the DSM-5. So we may end up having to talk about eligibility at some, obviously not in this memo, but maybe in within the next allocation cycle, we're going to have to look at that.
Yet another change.
Yeah, but those effects may be a little bit slower to come to our attention than some of the strands that you talked about. And I think it's the big bad around the corner.
Okay. Anything else? Um, 13E is the draft meeting schedule and allocation schedule, also in your packet. Yes, Peter.
A quick comment. There has been some conversation about the possibility of having a board retreat, and I wanted to kind of throw that out for discussion. The idea was that it would be for both boards to participate in, with the focus on ID, intellectual disabilities, and developmental disabilities. And we thought it would be useful to include providers in that, I think, and other interested stakeholders. It would essentially be an open meeting, because when you have all of our board together, we have to post it, and so anybody can come. And I was wondering what people thought about that idea, and we were thinking of that to make it effective and helpful to us, that it would be best to do it in the month of January, probably near our board meeting. The board meeting is scheduled for, as you can see from the schedule, the 22nd. We were talking about doing it on a Saturday, like a half a day, and that could either be the 25th would be a good opportunity for that, or the 18th, which could bump up against some Martin Luther King celebration activities. Maybe not. It is a Saturday, so I would like to just kind of throw that open and see what the board thinks about that at this point.
Certainly, some of our long-term goals involve increased investment in collaborative activities and trying to work with our own groups and with others as well. And I think it would be probably very valuable to have an open retreat at which we can talk about best practices, and in an environment where we're not, you know, assessing proposals and other things, but in which perhaps it could help provide guidance to some of the groups as well. And it seems like trying to do that in an off-cycle way where perhaps a lot of people would be able to attend might be valuable. So I would certainly advocate for it.
And who would set the agenda?
We would.
We being?
The boards.
The boards. Mm-hmm. So you'd have a period of hashing that out and then have the retreat.
I think it's a good idea, ditto what Phil says.
I like the idea. I'm not sure I like the idea combined to both boards. I'm not sure when you bring together both boards, all we're trying to do on our side, all they're trying to do on their side, and all the providers that we both have, I don't know that there's enough time available to touch everything appropriately. I'd like to maybe have some more talk about that. I think it might be better served to have two separate than to have one together. I'm not trying to eliminate any joint activity, but by the same token, there's a lot of things that we do that they're not involved in, and there's a lot of things that they do that we're not involved in, and all those are going to want to be, whether we have breakouts or what we do.
I think you make a good point.
Yeah, that is a good point.
So would you, I suppose what we can do is do some preliminary planning, and does the 25th look like a good date for people?
Yeah, it's good as any for me.
Okay. Well, we'll work on that and bring that back in November. Talk about how that might be structured.
Anything else about the schedule?
Just one item I was going to mention that for it's not on here, but Ebert Fest is going to be April 4th. I'm sorry, April 23rd through the 27th. So it doesn't interfere with any of the board meetings or anything at this point. So. Like it did last year. And I think the ACMI meeting is scheduled for very early April, so we won't have that confluence of all those different things like we did this past year.
Okay. So we'll move on to old business. The Disability Resource Expo. Barb is it? Who's? Oh, there you are. Didn't see you. I'm used to seeing you over there. Okay, on there that end. Yes, Barb, please go on.
Well, it's over. The expo was held October 12th and was not without challenges this year, pretty significant challenges. We had a venue change 12 days prior due to the fact that our new event center was not completed yet, and we were concerned about them having permits, so we kind of came to a mutual agreement that we would move it back to Lincoln Square. And fortunately, they were very accommodating. They had the date available, and so we did that. It involved a lot of running around and changing our advertising and doing a lot of stuff like that to make sure that folks were aware that the location had changed. It happened. I have to give kudos to Jim Mayer, who is our map guy, who had already mapped out everything at the new location and somehow made it all fit into Lincoln Square. We did have to use the parking lot at the Landmark Hotel, which fortunately was available also, and that worked out okay. We ended up having 92 exhibitors this year. We had 77 last year, so that was a significant increase. 26 of those were new exhibitors this year. So I kind of did a little bit of an estimate of attendance just by the number of resource books that we distributed. We distributed nearly 900 resource books to folks coming in. So. And there were some, I understand, I know Lynn was at the door, Sue was at the door, some folks that didn't take, you know, a bag. So kind of if you add some kids to that, you know, kind of guessing around 1,200, 1,200 folks perhaps that attended. So good attendance. We as I mentioned, the resource books, and they're out here somewhere, they're down there. If your agency would like some of these for your staff for, you know, just distribution, please let me know. Just email me and I will deliver them. We do have extras because we want to get them out. We want them used. Let's see. You also have the participant and exhibitor evaluations that we did, kind of a summary of that I just finished up. And so those are available down there if you haven't picked one up. And I think they were very positive, as usual. And I think, you know, so folks want this. They need it. They're obviously seeking resources. One of the things I kind of continually heard the day of and later was that there were, it seemed as though more people were stopping and asking questions. They were seeking information. You know, they weren't just coming by and picking up the freebies off the table. Lots more of that. So that was really good to hear. Let's see. Okay, I think, you know, we had some excellent entertainment, and I think the evaluations showed that folks really liked that. We had the drumming for health, which is therapeutic drumming. You heard good and bad. People really liked it, but it was a little loud. So, you know, that's something we'd need to look at again. We had Leaders for Life, and I know some of you guys, kids were involved. And my kid was involved. She actually got up there and broke a board. That scares me. She hasn't done it at home yet, so anyway. The U.S. Soccer Association did a great job out on the parking lot. They actually started playing inside, and it scared me because, they did a great job, showing folks how they play soccer. We had the Momenta dance team, and they were wonderful as well. Donnie Heitler, of course, played for us again. We had the mini horses, and that was a huge attraction. The Healing Horse Stables brought two little mini horses out there, and folks really enjoyed that. The art show, I think, was really well attended. The Pride folks, I don't know sales-wise how they did, really. I know there were sales, definitely. You got a nice painting. But we had some really positive comments in the evaluations about that as well. That's pretty it. We had some few technical problems setting up, that happened.
Barb, I was able to make it there, and I wanted just to tell you a short story. My son is involved in the Leaders for Life, and of course was doing the demonstration, but he saw the Momenta dance group. He cannot stop talking about that. It was such an interesting reaction, but then again, I can't either. So, it's one of those things. I just wanted to tell you that the difference between the first and what we have now is just monumental. You have done an excellent job, and every time I go, I see new things. I see people asking questions, which I am very happy about. And to think about where we've come with your leadership has been really wonderful. So thank you so much. Thank you to all the agencies who also did tremendous work on this. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, and I do want to say a big thank you to our steering committee because, they worked hard on this. And, when we changed venues, they worked even harder. So just did a phenomenal job all the way up through cleanup on Monday.
I just want to commend Barb and the steering committee, too. And I have been amazed at the time volunteers spend on this. It's incredible from all the agencies. And I particularly want to commend you this year because it was really seamless. The change in venue in 2 weeks was unbelievable. I can't get over that. It was seamless.
Hand come up. Anybody else? Any other comments?
I also want to say thanks to Lynn because that the book, she worked really hard on the book and it's great. The books are really useful. Folks can use them throughout the year. We distribute them throughout the year. So I do, again, encourage folks to take some. We have a box over there with some in them. I've got more in the car.
Okay, well, thank you, and looking forward to next year, right? Okay, the public hearing September 18th, you have in your packet the consolidated statement from the stakeholders, the PowerPoint presentation, the transcript of the comments and that were read, and there was additional written testimony submitted both before and after the hearing. So that's all. Not everything is in here. I think there's been some written since.
This one, which is
There are copies of a letter that we received just about a week ago. And then the letter from the HAPS is not included because I didn't see it till this morning.
Yeah.
It was gone a couple days. But so Peter is responding to these individually. And then we can if you haven't received them through email, we can continue to share them as they come. I think it's very helpful for me to hear these stories and to then talk with people about what they would prefer to find.
Mm-hmm. So. All right. Anything else about that hearing? Okay, we'll move to board announcements. Are there any that we haven't? Dealt with? Okay, I think. Oh.
Just a general announcement. The Transition Planning Committee, sponsored by like everybody that's here, is hosting 20 records again on November 20th. That's correct. Yeah. And it's going to be at Christopher Hall. And Tony is coming to the county, he's doing a Making County on the 19th. We're trying to team it together to do that. So, unfortunately, the Champaign Public Library was not available, Urbana wasn't available, Civic Center wasn't available, so it's going to be the other three venues with my building. So, we can accommodate a fair amount of people, at least 60 comfortably, and we can move tables out and get more in if we really had a bunker turnout. But I think last time we had about 45 people that showed up for that event, so I think we'll be fine in my building if we can get this up.
And there's a PTSD event at Parkland on November 15th. It requires registration, so I sent the flyer to you all. But if you're interested in going, we have as a co-sponsor of this event, we have 10 free seats, and we can offer them to board members and agencies who are involved. They don't offer CEUs. It was going to be a CEU event, but they decided the cost of that was too high to offer two CEUs. So it still might be of interest. Keep forwarding that.
Thanks. I have one more before you close the meeting, and that is on November 13th and 18th, one in Chicago, one in Effingham, we're going to be hosting a grassroots employment conference. It's a one-day event. And our main speaker is going to be Phil Milsk, who is the person who wrote the Employment First legislation. Also, we've agreed to people from Community Choices and some other groups around the state who are doing employment for individuals with fairly significant disabilities have agreed to come and talk about their approaches. We have some folks from DRS who are going to be attending, so it should be a very interesting day, and I will be happy to send the flyer out to Peter. I think you've gotten it once, but maybe again, and if you want to contact me, I'm happy to provide more information to you about that.
Thank you. Okay, anything else to share, to announce? Well, I believe we're at the end of our meeting then. We can adjourn. Yes.
Why didn't you tell me I misspelled your name over and over and over and over? and over and over again.
I didn't even notice.
I noticed it when I was just flipping through my packet. I'm like, wait a minute, I spelled it right once. I don't like to add two G's to it.
You know what? Okay, still.
So I'll change that before it's posted online.
Oh, I don't care. I mean,
well, you know.
Really, that kind of thing. But thank you. Thank you. But that kind of thing.
Me, I mean, same day, right? Sounds like it'll be here.
The 20th?
Now, that should be the worst.
The 20th, right? Wednesday? Wow.
That I have to worry about.
I know.
I mean, you know, it's probably not
does he answer your emails? He never answers mine.
Well, he might answer Linda's.
Oh. Well, why don't we ask about that?
Yeah.
You got a second? Would you tell Gary had a couple questions about access? If you have a moment, tell him to come on down to my office and we'll talk with him.
I know, I can talk to her about it. Okay. I wanted to make sure I didn't get wrong.
I know.
So she said,
I noticed when we were, when we were doing the minutes, and I'm like, wait a minute. I said it with one T one time, and then I went back to go into two T's.
She said it was no big deal, and I was like,
she wouldn't. I said, well, I'm going to change it before it gets posted online.
Oh, yeah.